Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome to Resource People Podcast. I'm Tara Diamond from AMA, your host. And today we're bringing you a cracking episode with Jade Nightingale, an auto electrician at Fortescue's Solomon site. In this episode, Jade reveals her very real first-hand experience of the journey of completing her apprenticeship at Fortescue as part of the trade-up program, and really her day-to-day life of working on-site at a giant iron ore operation. Hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Jade.
Hello.
It's great having you. And before we start, I want to congratulate you. I understand that about a year ago, you completed an apprenticeship with Fortescue as an automotive electrician working on HME. And tell us what that achievement was like for you.
Yeah, it was pretty good considering I didn't think I was going to make it to the end. No, it was very rewarding for myself to see it through. And now, being a tradie for a whole year, it's just been amazing. They always say that you learn a lot more out of your trade in like the first year or two, and it's so true. Just because I guess like you're used to being a shadow just with your tradie, you kind of just see what they're doing and you're just taking so many different things in. But actually doing it yourself is by yourself is completely different.
Oh, a whole different ball game, hey? Well, that's awesome. Congratulations. And I'd love to know a bit about your background. I understand you've got a farming background. You grew up in Esperance. I'd really love to know a bit about your background and what led you to a career in the mining industry.
Yeah, so my mum and dad worked in the shearing sheds, and my dad got offered to go work on the mines back in when Fortescue was just new. So he took that, and he's been in the company for about 10 years now. Probably about 5 years ago, he goes, oh, there's an opportunity for you to go work at Chrissy Creek. And to be honest, at the start, I was a bit hesitant because I had some plans to go over east to work in the shearing sheds over there and just travel for work.
Yeah.
And then I really thought to myself, I was like, no, you'd be silly not to take this. So we did it, and it was about a month before I actually got to site, but I was so, so nervous.
Oh, really?
Oh, because I didn't know anyone. This was all new to me.
Like, yeah, you knew your way around a shearing shed, I bet.
Yeah, absolutely. And then getting off a plane and then having everything. So what really surprised me the most was you didn't have to pay for the food.
And everything's done for you. You just have to work.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to get on the bus and show up. So the reason I took it was because I was like, well, the shearing industry I love, obviously, because I grew up in it, but I always wanted an apprenticeship, and I was trying to get one in town, but just a small town, I didn't really have much luck. So when Dad said that there was more opportunity to get an apprenticeship up there, you just kind of have to get your feet in the door, and I was like, yeah, okay, no worries. So definitely did that, but I'm glad I did it because look at me now.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'd like you to kind of, if you can, tell us about the journey from that first day getting off the plane to now completing your apprenticeship. Kind of how did that all start from that first day starting at Fortescue?
Yeah, so I was on the plane, and it was actually, like I said, I was so nervous. And then one of Dad's friends, who's now one of my good friends, she was at the back of the plane, and she called my name, and I was like, oh, my God, who's that?
Oh, really?
She got me off the plane, and she like basically took me under her wing across the tarmac, just told me like, you know, just do this, you'll be fine, just go with the flow. So I thank her every day for that. From then it was just so daunting, like I said, but it went really quick because it was just all new stuff. So like, you know, new
lots to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. So lots to learn, a new environment, new people to meet, getting excited, meeting new people, like making new friends. I was so overwhelmed but, like, so excited at the same time for just starting something different.
Do you mind if I ask how old you were?
Yeah, I was 19.
Yeah, wow. It's incredible, yeah. Isn't it, the start that you can get in an industry to get those opportunities, because you started as a maintainer and operator at the ore processing facility at Christmas Creek, as you said, before moving into mining equipment operating. Tell us the difference between the two.
So I was basically down at the OPF, and what I would do, hose down all the buildup of the waste that would drop out from the OPF, like just from the conveyor belts and stuff. So I'd hose all that out, and then you eventually got to go on the skid steer, which is like a little bobcat, and then move up onto like a smaller kind of loader, which I would call small now from working with big ones. So you just got a wide variety of different activities throughout the day. So you could be hosing out all the waste build up, and then 1 minute you're just scooping it all up and getting it and moving it to the other side of the OPF. Like, it, I don't know if it's like that today, but that's what it was like when I was there. And it was, I loved it. I loved every bloody minute of it. And but then going to an operator driving the dump trucks, it was the complete opposite.
Oh, wow. Like,
yeah. So I've always done very physical work. So then going just to sitting on my bum for 12 hours a day was just, it was refreshing for the first swing, maybe, because I was learning. And then after that, I was just kind of found myself in a bit of a slump and I wasn't really enjoying it. But that's not to say, like, you know, other people might enjoy it.
It just wasn't for you.
Mm. Yes. I found myself in a bit of a slump, kind of going, oh, what am I doing? Like, you know, why did I do this? But then I got the opportunity of the trade-up. So that came around. So that comes around yearly. When I started, it was about September. It's usually around September, but.
And can you tell people what trade up is for those that don't know?
So in high school, I completed my Cert 1 and 2, but some people might not have that. So they will go through trade up to get that. So it's like a, basically like a pre-app, but you're doing it at work.
Preparation for an apprenticeship, yep.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And then you start your apprenticeship after that. So you do a whole year of like just getting used to everything. And then after that year, you go on and to sign your apprenticeship and then you start your apprenticeship. I didn't do that because in high school I already had my Cert 1 and 2 and that was still valid, so I just went straight into an apprenticeship.
Fantastic. That's awesome. So that's a good tip for people if they've got kids or if their kids listening, that those Cert 1s and 2s in high school can pay off even if you don't know where you're going to end up, right?
Absolutely, because I did Cert 1 and 2 in year 11 and 12 of automotive, so that's just like, you know, light vehicle. And when I finished school, I tried to get an apprenticeship in town, but I was unsuccessful. And then I just gave up, to be honest. And then I just went and did what I knew. Like I said, if I had known that that was going to lead me to where I am now, I would have told you you're lying.
Well, yeah, I want to know what the best part of doing an apprenticeship at Fortescue is. Are you able to, you know, narrow it down? I'm sure there's lots of challenges, lots of opportunities, but what's been the best part for you?
I would have to say the bit that I did quite enjoy was I flew to Port Hedland twice and I'd never been there before. So that was really exciting. In the apprenticeship, we had a safety champion. So they would nominate one apprentice from each site to be like your safety champion. Yeah, so we'd go to Port Hedland and meet up and say, you know, what our own experiences were, like maybe if there was a incident or something and like what we thought about it, and would go up and share that. So I quite enjoyed that. That was a really good eye-opener to go as an apprentice to other apprentices, see what they thought about the safety side of things as well.
Yeah, again, another eye-opener.
Yeah,
You know, there's so many, I'm sure, challenges and opportunities through the whole process. Let's start with the opportunities. You know, what did you find most beneficial? You touched on the mentoring before and shadowing and all those sorts of things. But, yeah, would love to know what you thought, you know, some of the most beneficial opportunities you've got through your apprenticeship.
I would say I had quite a few different tradies when I first started, and I think just seeing how each different person and their own knowledge. So, you know, one of my first tradies, he worked in town, so he had a broader knowledge, because obviously if you do an apprenticeship in town, you've got a bit more knowledge than you would on a mine site. So that was really cool. And then over the years, there's a few tradies that I did work with, and they were just mine site tradies, just, you know, just like me, that would only have a certain amount of knowledge because, you know, we don't pull apart stuff to fix it. We just replace it.
Mm.
So that was really, I loved meeting new people and where they did their apprenticeship, how, and, you know, some of them were like first and second year and they were already out in their own fixing stuff, where it's a bit of a, when you do that on site, you're with a tradie until you're about third year and then you start doing stuff by yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, so just learning from others and seeing all of their different skills.
Absolutely. And the other one is working on obviously different machines. So they try and do 6 monthly rotations throughout all the departments and sites as well. So I started on Ansil, which is braiders, loaders, dozers, and some tyre handlers. I think it could be different now because it was about 4 years ago. So I started on that, and then I went to diggers and drills, and that's where I found my passion, was in diggers and drills.
Is that right?
Absolutely. So I work on drills now, and I just love it.
A lot that of people is so cool.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. You talk to some people and they're like, oh, what do you do? I was like, oh, I'm just an auto spark on drills. And they're like, oh, yuck, I couldn't think of anything worse. And I'm like, okay, that's fine, but I froth it. But, yeah, so then I was on diggers and drills for maybe a year, and I was in between diggers and drills. So it was really good to get different machines every day. I think I was there for about a year with my main tradie, who I absolutely love. He showed me so much, and it just gave me the time of day as well. We did a lot of breakdowns together, so that was a big eye-opener as well. Breakdowns is quite different to just planned servicing.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of just found my drive, you know, doing breakdowns with him and then going back to planned service and just diggers and drills in general.
Wow, so the variety sounds really great. And how many sites did you get to move through?
So I started at Christmas Creek, and I was there in my apprenticeship, I was there for about a year and a half. And then I came to Solomon. I must have just been like at my second year, going to my third. So I've basically been at Solomon since, and then I went to do my work placement in town when I used to live in Bunbury.
Cool.
And then, yeah, that was really good, actually. I did that for about 5 months. It was a massive eye-opener because I personally didn't want to do it. I just wanted to get my apprenticeship done and dusted. It was a part of the apprenticeship they had to do, so I was a bit standoffish about it, but I'm so glad I did it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I just wanted to get my apprenticeship done and dusted. I didn't want to, like, stuff around in town. But this is the main thing. I hear a lot of apprentices saying that they don't want to do it. They had the kind of mindset that I did, but I go, you should, because it's so worth it. I think that's why they do it as well, is that, you know, you just get to see a whole other side of how everything happens. So obviously small company, small town company, and then we just did a variety of things. So we went from cars to boats to caravans to trucks.
Handy in your personal life too, to work on the electrics of your car or your boat, or as well.
Absolutely. Everything. I've got a Navara and I've done everything to my car. And I look at some people and they go, oh, I spent this much getting my light bar put on there. And I'm like, oh, okay. I don't have that issue.
Yeah, wow. Well, you just touched on a couple of things, like, you know, being apprehensive about doing your work placement. But are there any challenges that stood out to you, you know, while you were completing your apprenticeships? Was there anything that you found really difficult apart from, you know, the apprehensive of the things that you didn't know before you did it?
There's a couple of things. Like, I struggled with a bit of my own mental health for a bit. And I tried to get some help. And then I just realized that I didn't need to rely on anyone. I just had to rely on myself and get myself through this, which is, like, you know, a bit crap, but it happens. So that was probably one of the biggest things, and that was a bit more towards the end of my apprenticeship. I had my own challenges going on, but I still managed to kind of not put them to the side, but just kind of rise above it and get through it. I don't really talk about it because it's I just don't think it's relevant sometimes.
Oh, I mean, I think more than ever, people talking about their mental health. So I really, you know, just thank you for doing that, because it's not always a bed of roses, you know, working
Absolutely
through,
not.
Figuring out your life, figuring out what works for you, what doesn't, when you've got challenges in your own life, whether it's at work or at home or in your family and your relationships, that affects everything in your life. So I think it's totally relevant. And thank you so much for letting us know, because, you know, just even saying it was tough, but I, you know, managed to do what I needed to do to rise above those challenges at the time and then still keep going with your apprenticeship just is a massive credit to you.
Yeah, thank you. But I do hear a lot of people going, oh, no, it'll be all right. But you know, you just don't know what's going on with someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do find that a lot up here, that people just go, oh, she'd be right. Like, oh, don't worry about it. And it's just like, yeah, okay, I won't, but I'm going to stress about that for probably the next 3 hours now. But, you know, it's just, it's easy just to go, oh, yeah, have a cup of concrete and, you know, just the old sayings. And it's like, yeah, okay, all good. But really, you just kind of need that one. It honestly, and I know it sounds so cliche, but it just takes that one person to go like, hey, mate, how are you? You're doing good today? And you can just go, no, actually. You know, it's that big stigma of going,
yes,
it should be right.
Yeah, it's so cathartic when someone actually just reaches out, isn't it? And it sounds like you had amazing mentors with your tradies that you were with. Did you find that changing between tradies was really beneficial to learn the different styles? And do you find that, you know, it's obviously a very male-dominated industry. Did you have any female role models through your apprenticeship as, you know, tradies for you or on-site that you were able to kind of look up to see, you know, how they deal with all these different types of aspects of life?
I did. I had a female tradie and she was the best. She was so cool. I loved her. I still do. She was one of my second tradies I had, and she was very switched on as well, and I loved it because she was one of my second tradies. I just found it so cool that I had a female tradie straight up.
Yeah, and, right.
When I came to Solomon, one of the boys said, oh, I've only ever seen three female auto sparkies in my whole entire career. That was really weird for me because at Christmas Creek, there was quite a lot of females in the workshop.
Right.
When I came to Solomon, there was no girls. I was the only girl in my department at the time. But, yeah, I found it really hard to believe for him to say that he'd only seen three female auto electrical trade persons.
Yeah, well, hopefully you and others are changing that.
Absolutely, yeah. So, well, there's heaps now. Heaps now that I've finished. I can't even keep up anymore, but it's good. It's good.
Well, I want to ask you a bit about that, but before we do, I'd love to know a bit about what a typical day through your apprenticeship. There's probably nothing like a typical day, but for people who, you know, are either thinking about this as a career or just have no idea what an apprenticeship auto sparky does, would love for you to give people a bit of an idea of what kind of a general shift would look like.
Yeah, so one thing I would say, if you love going out on the weekends, if you have mad FOMO, all that, I would definitely say don't come by for unless you get like a even time roster.
Right.
Like I said, I was 19 when I started, so I did miss out on stuff, but I'm just accustomed to it now that it doesn't bother me if I do.
Right.
But in saying that, you could probably take time off if you wanted to, but, you know. A typical shift would be waking up at 3:30 in the morning, getting ready, and then I leave my room at about 1:45, and then you go down to the mess, get your crib, get on the bus, and then you go do your breatho, you sign the breatho, and then you do your pre-start and handover. So that's where you would go see what night shift has left you or day shift has left you, whatever you've been on, and what you've got going on. And then you just have a chat about the job, and then you go do your PSB, which is your pre-start briefing. You know, that just rolls through like all your, like where your blasts might be or your general notices, anything that's been rolled out. And then you just have a general discussion, do some stretches, and then you just get on with your day, whether it be a breakdown, whether it be servicing or carrying on the service or starting a new service. So it could be, but it all depends to what time of year it is. Like you might have interruptions with the weather being in the Pilbara, like with the wet season.
Yeah.
There's certain measures in place that you can't work under certain lightning. If it's too close, you've got to stop all work. And if it's hot, it's bloody hot. Oh. As it would be anywhere. Like but some days I just stand out in the sun. Well, like I'm working and I just think, what am I doing?
It's so hot. But I love your honesty about the type of roster in terms of the people that might be thinking about, you know, this is a career, about, you know, the type of rosters and then also the type of conditions, you know, the weather, the heat, all of those sorts of things really affect work and really affect, you know, operations and sites. So that's great advice and an overview. And Fortescue as a company is really well renowned for its training programs. I don't know how hard of a question this is, but you might have come across different people when you were doing your TAFE elements or all the rest of it. But I want to know what you think from the inside is good about doing an apprenticeship with Fortescue.
The different variety of people that you will run into.
Right.
Especially through TAFE, like you'll be at site and then you go to TAFE. This is one thing I notice is when you go to TAFE, you meet so many different people. Like I still see some of the fellas today that I went to TAFE with and I'm like, oh my goodness. I was like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, that's so great.
But, you know, they'll randomly just pop up. You know, mining's such a small world. I don't care what anyone says. In my opinion, it's such a small world. So when you go to TAFE, like, it was like, oh, you know, hey, how are you going? I haven't seen you. Like, how's things? How's the family? How's the new baby? Or, you know, how's the new house? Like, you just catch up, a big catch up, as well as learning. And in my TAFE group, the auto sparkies just would stay together and then the mech fitters and then fitters would just do their own thing. So it was only a group of sparkies doing their apprenticeship together. But it was really good because we became quite a little group of friends and we still see each other to this day, obviously, because we're still in the same company.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's so good to see him. And you do make some friends, even if you don't see him outside of work. When you come to work, it's like I said, oh, hey, how are you? It's good. It's good to see him. So that's one thing I'll definitely take out of the apprenticeship is the amount of people that are definitely made a friend.
That's awesome because it is the relationships in work that often make the work the best thing. And
oh, absolutely. Having a good crew is really a big thing because even if you are having a crap day, you know, one of them will pick up on her and be like, hey, like, how's it going? Like, you don't see yourself, like, oh, yeah, I just got some stuff going on.
Well, you know,
and it's the fact that, well, here at Solomon, we work 12 and a half. We did the extra half hour. So it's 12 and a half hours with these people for 2 weeks. So you do build up relationships.
Yeah, like a family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've talked about, you know, your crew and how good it is when you have a good crew and talked a bit about the day in the life. But before I get on to the next topic, I just want to ask you genuinely what you enjoy most about your job.
Don't get me wrong, it's a love-hate relationship.
Every job usually is, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. Just for me, I'm still learning and I'm very open about me being a not like slow learner, but I struggle to retain information if it's not properly explained to me. Like I have to get someone to like explain it to me as we're going along with the job.
Yeah,
or show me it, and that's just me, like this is how I learn. But the best thing for me is if I'm on a job and I'm like, oh yes, I remember that. And it turns out to be what it is because I doubt myself quite a lot, which is something I'm working on not to do.
Yeah.
But most of the time I will find, you know, I go to a job or it's just come in for service and something's wrong and it is what I think it is, but I doubt myself so I don't think it is that. But it turns out to be that.
Back yourself, Jade.
So, that's another thing. You've got to be not confident, confident in yourself. I said to myself, all right, no, we've done this before. Go through the steps that I know that I've written down. I write a lot of stuff down too, so I just find it better that I can go back and read that.
Yeah, and process it and check things.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's that line, isn't it, between, you know, confident and backing your own ability and being cocky because that's where the mistakes happen, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I definitely don't be cocky because it's not me, but like the most rewarding thing would be going, oh, yes, I know. Oh, I fixed it. You know,
yeah, and great. I fixed it.
So that's where I get my little happiness from.
And a lot of people's jobs don't get that because there's not an immediate outcome. You know what I mean? There's not something that's been fixed or something that's, you know, that's been a problem that's need to be problem solved. So I think that's a really incredible, although it must be challenging, you know, to really make sure that you're, you know, confident enough to kind of put your opinion out there and back yourself. But I'd love to touch back more about something we started to talk about, which is the diversity of the workforce, not just gender, but all different types of diversity, because, you know, the resources industry has a perception and the industry is working really hard, but a very male-dominated, typically older demographic, you know, small portion of Aboriginal and Islander people. But Fortescue is really renowned for really working hard to change that. How have you found the industry and even Fortescue's changed over your time there. I mean, you touched on it before that, you know, someone commented on you that they didn't know any female auto sparkies, but the other site you'd come from, you'd seen heaps. So, you know, have you seen the workforce changing? Because we know that Fortescue's working really hard to be a more diverse workplace.
Definitely. I've definitely seen a bit more females get involved in the apprenticeship and trade-up program, and definitely more just women in general. But I think Fortescue is good for that, because even though it is, and in my opinion, kind of always will be a male-dominated area, and women have the opportunity now to just learn, come in and get a job without hesitation. You know, they can come, they can apply for it, they'll get it, and they can still learn without the stigma of being, oh, you should be a cleaner or you should do this. But they're allowed to do that now. They're allowed to be in the workshop because Fortescue's allowed it, as many other companies as well. But yes, no, there's even just your, not even just a tradie, like even just your service people, your TAs, there's a lot more women involved now. And it's good to see. It really is.
Yeah, I bet. I'd also like to know, because Fortescue, I don't know if you know this, their apprenticeship success rate for completions is much higher, significantly higher than anywhere else across Australia. And females make up now about 25% of Fortescue's trade-up program, which is fantastic to build a pipeline. And you've already said that you've seen that without, you know, even talking about the stats. But really a pipeline of women ready to pursue trades career, because, you know, lots happen in the industry to try and get more female engineers, et cetera, but it's really in the trades and the operators that we need to get far more females to join the industry. And we know that that's a challenge, but what would you say to other females out there who perhaps are working out their career path or considering the mining industry?
I would just say, if you're thinking about it, just do it, because if you do it and you don't like it, then you can just go home. But if you don't do it, then you might regret it later. Because that's what I was thinking. So I was like, oh, no, I've already got plans. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I can always go back to something that I already knew, whereas this opportunity for me might not come around again. And I'm so glad I did.
Yeah, because now you've got a trade.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will always be able to go back to the shearing sheds, because that's just something I know. You know, and now if I didn't want to do this, I could, you know, go back to town, and if I didn't like it, I could come back up here, all because I just took the leap, took the jump.
And you have a trade that you'll be able to use anywhere in the world now.
Absolutely. And that's another beneficial thing. Like, if you're thinking about it, just bloody do it. It's so worth it. Like, you will obviously come across challenges, but as anything, just push through them and it will be so worth it. Just trust the process. I promise you it'll be worth it.
Yeah. And my last question, what do you say to people, family, friends, people like me, anyone that says, you know, what's it like working in mining? Do you encourage people to think about considering it? What do you say to people?
Absolutely. You know, I personally love mining. It's a good way to get yourself set up. Obviously, it's good money. But with that too, it's, you know, the roster, being away from your family. If that's something you can handle in a nice way, if you're so used to being, you know, in town, around everyone, then coming up here might feel like you're isolating yourself from everyone, because it is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And you can't just go next door to go see mum or dad, or just down to the shop, or, you know, just to the pub with your mates. It's, well, you can go to the pub with your mates, but, you know. Yeah.
Your workmates.
Yeah, workmates, yeah. So it's, I definitely do say go for it. It's definitely good to get yourself in front and work on the bigger picture in the future, but at the same time, just be aware that it is not just unicorns and rainbows.
Yeah, hard work and different kind of rosters. That's absolutely really great advice.
Yeah.
Jade, thank you so much for sharing your experience of what you've been through to get your trade and to build your career and to build your life. Thank you so much for your honesty. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on Resource People Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Resource People Podcast. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jade and her very real and candid description of the challenges and opportunities in forging a career in the resources and energy industry. Hope you enjoyed the episode and look forward to you joining us next time on Resource People Podcast.
AMA acknowledges and pays respects to the traditional custodians of the land from which the Resource People podcast was recorded from today, both the Turrbal and Yugara people. AMA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which you are living, learning, and listening to this podcast from today. We pay our respects to elders both past, present, and emerging.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.